Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Question Reality with Priscilla Leona, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to the Question Reality Radio Show. I'm Priscilla Leona, producer and host of this show, and we are coming to you live from Los Angeles, California. Now, for 14 years, we have been providing our audience with entertainment industry career advice. Now, this show is for you if you are questioning your career reality, which we all do, right? It's like, what the hell am I doing stapling these damn papers? Get the hell out of it. Set this trash can on fire. No, it's really not. But, you know, when I was an intern, there were some times when I felt like doing that. I mean, we all question our reality. So, if you are pursuing a career in show business, this is very prevalent in your life sometimes when you can't buy a damn burger at McDonald's. You're like, why? Why can I only afford two tacos for 99 cents? You question your reality, do you not? Okay, so, or if you're already working in the entertainment industry and you just need some tips, advice, and resource information on how to elevate your career status. Now, the guests on our show include Emmy Award winners, Grammy Award winners, Tony Award winners, reality TV stars, and we just have a wide variety of working show business professionals who work as film, television, music, and radio producers and directors. We have casting directors, we have literary agents, casting agents, PR agents, talent managers, screenwriters, publicists, actors, comedians, singers, novelists, script supervisors, stunt people, some of my favorite. As you know, I love my stunt men. Try to get them in the studio if I can. And we have celebrity makeup artists. And we throw in entertainment attorneys at least once a year. Believe me, if you need an entertainment attorney, you have arrived in the entertainment industry. But even if you can't afford it, there's LegalZoom, which I highly recommend. I do not take a cent from these people, but I have found so many people in the entertainment industry that use the service, and they're always saying, oh, this is great, that's great. So LegalZoom, I think that's what they're called. I'm not sure. I think it's LegalZoom. Now, if you missed any of our shows, here are three ways that you can listen to past shows. Number one, you can download the free mobile app, which is on the App Store or the Google Play Store. We're also on iHeartRadio, iTunes, Amazon Podcast, Google, Audible.com, Stitcher.com. Just go and Google me. Google me. I never thought I'd love to say those words. Google me. Sounds sexual, doesn't it? But it's absolutely not. Well, it could, but it's not. Okay, so you Google my name, Priscilla Leona, or LA Talk Radio, or Question Reality. And there are so many other platforms that our shows are on. So just do that if you're against any of the other companies. In today's society, somebody's always against some company for something. So we have a plethora of platforms to choose from. Number three, archive page. You can listen directly from the website that you're listening to us on right now, which is latalkradio.com. So just look for our show title, Question Reality, or look for my name, Priscilla Leona, under the host tab. And I have a little itsy bitty beady. Oh, you can tell I've been hitting the pina colada, cut water, cocktails in a can too hard today. You know I like to sip one during my interviews. I just discovered them. I'm loving them. I got like a little tiny, I think it's a 4-pack at the Vaughn store, believe it or not. I just discovered them a couple weeks ago at a friend's birthday party. And my God, it cuts down on lots of things. But listen, so a favor we want to ask you. We want to please subscribe to our podcast via Apple Podcasts, and please give us a like and a follow on all of our social media sites. Now, you know, today you need a little thump, right? I mean, that is the way of the world. Out with the business cards, in with the thumb. So we're on Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, YouTube, TikTok, you name it. And of course, what is my tip every week? Branding, 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 branding. Please, people, when you're starting out, which I hope will be an illustrious career, think about branding. If you can go by your name, like I did, Priscilla Leona, you want to do that. If you have a product, maybe one name. As you know, throughout history, what have been, how many words have been in the most famous movies? One or two? Casablanca, Top Gun, you know, the list goes on and on. But that's research. Research and development has said that if you want to gain a following, if you want to get a social media digital footprint, you have to do proper branding. And that starts with most likely your name, if you're a singer, songwriter, actor, model, or a product, whatever you pick. But please don't make it kinky and goofy and silly. I mean, it's cute, but you know, people, when they go to Google you and they met you at some party and they were drunk out of their mind, like, what the hell was that guy's name? Kooky Dicky Doogie Dan, what was it? And they'll not remember it. Okay, probably won't remember your real name, but still, better chance if it's your real name. So finally, if you want to be booked on our show to promote and showcase your talents, current or upcoming projects or products, or you just want to help listeners by providing much appreciated entertainment industry career advice, like the gentleman on our show today, please go to our official website. Now you have to pay attention. This falls into the branding too, because people have like 5-10 second attention spans these days. So go to questionrealityradioshow.com, not the website that you're listening to us on now, which is obviously latalkradio.com. This is the website where we air the show. So again, questionrealityradioshow.com. Very, very easy. Go to the contact link. Just put your name, your email, and tell us why you want to be on the show. And we will give you great consideration, just amazing focus I have. All right, so now we're on to the fun stuff, the man who we've been lusting after. Yes, I love to use the word lusting, and this is a very handsome man. You know I love my handsome men, right? So I'm like, oh my God, he's such a good-looking guy. I want to love him up like a lusty lion. He's so cute, but he's more beyond being a handsome man. He is a mogul. Woo! I love to use that word, but he really, really is. Let me tell you a little bit about him. His name is Mark S. Berry. You know, everybody who's important has a middle name, right? Right? Or an initial. So Mark S. Berry, he is a music film producer. He is the chairman of AMG Corporation. Oh my gosh. Now his bio is like 15 pages. So I just tried to pull a little bit here and a little bit there to sum it up. But I really wish that I could read all of it, because this man has been put on this planet for a very special purpose, and he has helped so many people achieve their dreams. So let me just try. All right. So he began his career at Air Studios in London under the tutelage of, are you ready, Sir George Martin? People, if you don't know who Sir George Martin is, you do not belong in the music business. Okay, so he was the producer of the Beatles. Now, I hear a couple going, oh, yeah. His first assisting sessions were with Sir George Martin, and that is Live and Let Die, by Paul McCartney and Wings. And then his first major engineering assignment was one of my favorite singers of all time. I was so excited. Like, my husband's the Beatle fanatic, right? But I'm a Carly Simon fanatic. So he worked on Carly Simon's No Secrets album and included the worldwide smash, What Do I Play When My Husband Is Acting Up? You're so vain. Yes, I do. He knows it. Now, Mr. Barry's extensive music production, engineering, and remixing talents have earned him, are you ready for this, people? 36 gold and platinum record awards. When I saw the people he worked with, woo! I had to whip out my stilettos and I put on my faves. David Bowie, he's worked with Duran Duran. Hungry Like a Wolf, I Always Am. Everybody knows. Boy George, Karma, Chameleon. Oh my God. Love me some Boy George. He's worked with Billy Idol, Kool & the Gang. As a matter of fact, Kool & the Gang, one of the guys is producing one of my friends right now. They're making an album. Of course, Carly Simon and Joan Jett. I love rock and roll. My God, broke up with one of my first boyfriends after hearing that song. I'm like, yes, it's time. So he worked with all of my favorites. It's so exciting to talk to him after knowing that he's worked with these people. Now, his company, AMG Corporation, they are a leading Toronto-based entertainment and media company with satellite offices in New York, Hong Kong. He's got BJ in there. I'm thinking that might be Beijing, but we'll ask him. I want to make sure I get that right. And Seoul, Korea. And AMG has an elite client list of artists and content creators across film and music and television and digital media. They provide their clients with unique music advertising, like the really cool stuff you see on Hollywood Boulevard, way up on the billboards. They have brand integration. So he's going to agree with me about branding. I hope he says something about that, how important it is. And marketing opportunities. And they do it across traditional social media, mobile, film, TV, and gaming platforms. That is what it's all about now. When you're starting out in any business, you got to think of yourself as an entrepreneur, if that's what you're trying to be. And these are all the things you have to be thinking about simultaneously these days. It'll burn your brain out. Oh my gosh. So already, I think AMG is already the owner of an extensive music publishing catalog and 50% owned by publishing conglomerate BMG Rights Management. Now, if you're in the music business, you should know what BMG is. Again, focus. Now, AMG's mission, from what I understand, they want to target potential acquisitions in the music, film, and television industries, ranging from indie record labels. So perk your little ears up, you indie record label people and indie record recording artists, writers. They also work on feature-length films, extreme sports content, purchases in the music. I think I'm drunk off my cup right pina colada cocktail in a can right now. I only had two sips, but it's kicking in. You know I don't drink. You know I can't hold my liquor worth anything, but let's try to move on. So again, purchases in the music publishing sector, insertions of music into international feature films and TV releases, as well as the development of reality-based television programming. I have to know from Mark if he's hit my favorite reality show, 90 Day Fiancé. Gotta find out. AMG's music distribution is through affiliates of Sony and Universal. Please go to his website, theamgcorp.com. He's on Instagram at the AMG Corp. Woo! I'm seeing some consistency here with the branding. I'm getting excited. He's on Facebook, Mark S. Barry. That's okay. That's his name. He's on Twitter at MarkBerryAMG. Again, he's keeping it in the family with the branding. So without further ado, as if you weren't impressed, I feel like I just can hang up and you go to his website. I don't even know if he wants to come on. He's like bereft of anything to talk about now. But let's try to see if we can squeeze some stuff out of him, some good stories, some funny stuff. Welcome to the show, Mark S. Berry, Media Mogul.
Well, thank you very much, Priscilla.
You're overwhelmed.
How do I compete with that intro? Come on.
I know. What the hell is going on?
Okay, no more pina coladas for you. No more
pina coladas. Especially in a can, right? Thank God. I don't know what they put in there. I swear, every Sunday, Mark, I don't know what you do, but every Sunday I like to start, because I usually have a show, I like to start out with listening to Warren Buffett's Margaritaville. What do you do to get yourself all perked up?
Geez, that's a rough question.
Well, I know you live in Toronto, so you're usually
freezing your ass off. I was born in Massachusetts, raised in New York City, Brooklyn, and then about 35 years ago, I came to Toronto working on some music projects. I was doing international production globally, and my lawyer, Paul Schindler, would fly me to London. I'd go to Australia, I'd go to Germany, and I'd make records with local bands that the local record labels had signed.
I'm sorry. You know what I wanted to say to you real quick? I wanted to thank you. I don't want you to feel pressure, because I got 25 questions written for you, and I'm going to try to get them all in, because okay. I swear to God, everybody wants to like clip your hair or like chew your toenails off when I told them you were coming on the show. So I wanted to, I have a very organized, logical mind. So I wanted to start, because your life is so interesting, I wanted to get your origin story. So first of all, I love having music moguls on the show. Do you know my friend, by the way, Michael Narada Walden? He produced Whitney Houston's And I Will Always Love You.
Sure. Yeah, I know Michael.
Yeah. Just wanted to make sure I hadn't texted him and asked him if he knew you before you came on the show, but I just wanted to find out. Isn't he fantastic?
He's amazing. He's amazing. Oh, he's brilliant. A brilliant musician, producer, and I was a big fan of his.
Yeah, he's a great guy. Now, I know that you're originally from what I read, and if anything's wrong, please feel free to correct me, but I read that you were originally from Brooklyn, and at the inception of your career, you just decided you were going to fly over to the UK and start walking the streets of London looking for a job, stopping in every studio. This is what I thought was cool, that you took off the back of your favorite albums. Is that true?
That's true, except that I wasn't born and raised in Brooklyn. I was born in Massachusetts, raised in New York, and then wound up in Brooklyn a little later on in life. But at the end of the day, I didn't want to go to Vietnam, you know?
Yeah.
So I had become interested in music. I used to ask my dad, hey dad, listening to the Beatle records, how come the drums are on the left side and the vocals are on the right side? And my dad's like, I don't know, go find out, my junior and senior year, I went to the Institute of Audio Research in Manhattan, down on University Place, right by NYU, and I did 2 years there, and still did high school. And then, back in the day, every night you're watching Walter Cronkite, and all you see are body bags coming off the plane. This is in the height of the Vietnam War, and you got Kent State going on, and just total social craziness. So I looked at my mom and dad, and said, "They're going to draft me without a doubt," And my brother had already joined the Navy, so he was in the South Pacific somewhere on a boat. It's very safe. So my parents said, okay, this is what you want to do. You go do it. And I just said, okay, I'm going to go to London, England, because I was a big fan of the Brit sound, engineering-wise. I just loved the sound of the Elton John records and the Beatle records. And And I just got on a plane and went to England and just started, you know, like I said, pounding the streets, pounding on doors, and luckiest kid in the world. I got a job at Air Studio. It's just a complete accident, you know, how I got into the studio, you know.
Well, one of your quotes that I read, again, you know, correct me if I'm wrong, it said somewhere you said, and again, I'm paraphrasing, but I remember reading something like, it doesn't matter how many people say no, it just matters that one person says yes. So I imagine you walked into Air Studios and one person said yes. Was that?
Well, I initially walked into Air Studios after a bunch of rejections at a bunch of other studios, and the studio manager wasn't there. So the receptionist said, come back tomorrow. I came back tomorrow. The receptionist wasn't there. And this engineer came walking out of one of the main studios, and his name is Nigel Walker, and he said, you know, can I help you? I said, yeah, I'm here to see Joyce Moore, who was the studio manager. And she goes, oh, she's not here right now. I says, who are you? And I'm Mark Berry. Where are you from? And I'm New York City. He goes, oh, New York. Oh my God. Come on, I never met anyone from New York. Come on in, you know. And it was literally just like that. So I got invited into an Alan Clark session, and Alan Clark was the former lead singer for the Hollies, and there was a drummer named Brinsley Schwartz. Dee Murray, who was Elton John's bass player, was on bass for the sessions, and they were just, you know, recording pianos and vocals and everything. I said, I can't believe I'm in the middle of this. I can't believe this, right? And then I said, you know, can I come back tomorrow? And they said, yeah, come on back tomorrow. And then I started, I basically became a runner for the people in Studio B, which is the Alan Clark people. Like, oh, you need cigarettes? Great, I'm going downstairs. I'll get you. You want a coffee? I'll go get you coffee. You want a tea? I'll get you a tea. You know, I'm going downstairs. And then Joyce Moore came to me, who I had met eventually, and she said, you know, everyone kind of really likes you. You know, do you want a job? Do you want to be an assistant? And that's when it all started.
Wow. So did they say you're going to be working as an assistant for George Martin, or did you eventually get
my first sessions were with Sir George on the Paul McCartney and Wings project on the Live and Let Die album. We recorded that, and I was just, I was an assistant engineer. I was emptying ashtrays. You know, we had a 63-piece orchestra, you know, and every one of them smoked. So here I am emptying ashtrays and sweeping up the floor and rolling up mic cables and putting the mics away. And that was how I got started. And then I got along very well with Sir George. He invited me out to do some sessions. He's got a tremendous classical background. So I was doing live sessions with the King's Singers, which was this, you know, Baroque chamber choir group. And we'd go to like cathedrals around London with portable gear, and I had to set all the mics up and, you know, set all the music stands up and set the little console up where they were recording, you know, and that's really how, so I was doing a lot of work for Sir George.
Wow. You know, as I said, my husband's a huge Beatles fan, so he was telling me the story, and I didn't think about it until right before you were scheduled to come on, and I thought, you know, if you're going to get the story, you're going to get it from the horse's mouth. So can you give us the scoop on that floating rumor about how the film producer, I think his name was Harry Saltzman, he thought that the final product of the song Live and Let Die was a demo when Sir George brought it to him, and he wanted to talk to him about who they thought should sing it, and he had narrowed it down to either Shirley Bassey or Thelma Houston, and George Martin was like, what are you? He was so taken aback because Paul McCartney was commissioned to write the song for the movie.
I heard that story as well. Yeah. And it's funny because, you know, it was a 63-piece orchestra. I mean, that's like a lot of money to expend on a demo, right? And you have an entire orchestra and the band, and everyone's recording live off the floor. It's like, that's an expensive session.
Yeah. So do you think he was suggesting Shirley Bassey or Thelma Houston instead? Well, my first question when my husband told me this, I was like, wait a minute, did this man not hear that it was Paul McCartney singing the song? Did he not know who he was? If he did, why would he be? I mean, I'm a huge Shirley Bassey and Thelma Houston fan, but right. when I hear the song, I do not hear either of them in my mind singing that song. So I'm thinking,
no, not singing that song.
What was he
but
thinking?
Traditionally, the, you know, Shirley Bassey and Thelma would be perfect for like a James Bond soundtrack.
Shirley Bassey perfect. Did.
So that would make total sense that Harry Saltzman would say, "Okay, yeah, let's get the regulars in to make it happen."
But if it's Paul McCartney, I'm going to go with Paul if I'm Saltzman, right? I'm going to go with Paul. Right. But I guess George Martin was taken aback. And now I understand that Sir George was commissioned to write the song for the movie, but I'm not clear on this because I didn't know whether he had commissioned him to write like the whole album, I mean, the score the whole film, or just the opening song?
I don't think he scored the whole film. He just did the one, the main theme song. And of course, he's a brilliant arranger. So he wrote all of the string parts and the horn parts. And those were all directly from Sir George.
Oh, because I thought maybe Sir George ended up scoring it, because I know that Saltzman had a previous film score, John Barry, who wrote all the scores right. for the Bond songs, but they had a falling out apparently, and I thought, oh, he must have ended up having Sir George Martin score that for him.
And there you go. It goes back to like the old standards, like John Barry. He's like a brilliant, you know, arranger and scorer, so it would make sense that Saltzman would just rely on the old standards
that were
successful for all the other James exactly. Bond franchise films. You know?
Exactly, and they don't like to mess with money. It's like what worked and made me money. I'm gonna go with it again. Right?
You know, it's funny. We used to go to a diner on Hyde Park after the sessions, and we would see Cubby Broccoli. Cubby Broccoli was the producer of all the James Bond films. In fact, his daughter took over the franchise, Barbara Broccoli.
Right.
And right outside the diner, we would always see Cubby Broccoli's Rolls Royce, convertible Rolls Royce, and the license plate was Cubby, C-U-B-B-Y.
Right. That is, and so when you would see Cubby, you'd know, he's in the diner.
He's in the diner.
Let's go.
We would leave sessions at like 2, 3, 4, 5 in the morning, right? So,
right.
And we'd always see his Rolls Royce outside the diner.
So my next question is, I know you worked obviously with Sir George Martin, but did you get to meet, I would assume you did, Paul McCartney? And if so, what was the most memorable thing about him?
You know, I did. Of course, you know, we worked very closely together. Whatever he wanted, I got for him, whether it was, you know, a pack of smokes or, you know, a drink or whatever. So I remember very distinctly when the session was over and I was out there just tearing the whole session down, you know, rolling up the mic cables, putting the mics away, sweeping the floor. And as I'm sweeping the floor, Sir Paul walks out and just sits down at the piano and he starts playing the piano. And I'm sitting there, you know, just I'm sweeping the floor, you know, Paul McCartney's playing the piano and he starts just talking to me like, hey Mark, you know, thanks for your help. And, you know, I really appreciate it. And, you know, where are you from? And, you know, where'd you grow up? And, you know, what's your education? And, you know, where'd you go to school? And we just had like, it was literally an hour and a half conversation with Paul just doodling on the piano, singing. And I'm sitting there breaking down this, you know, 63 piece orchestra session. And then, you know, cause it was like the whole thing was done live off the floor with the exception of the vocals. So imagine, you know, the wings, the band is playing and you have this massive orchestra session, set up in Studio A of Air. And I had to break all things out and put all the mics away and you know, we actually had to borrow mics from other studios in the building, the other rooms, right, to record the thing properly. So, yeah, but he was just like a regular. Paul was just a regular guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this man, Paul McCartney, I mean, you would think, you've heard all those stories about famous people and how they're rude and they just, I mean, but there has never been one person, at least in my personal experience, that has met him personally, who's ever had an unkind word. And the stories are always similar. Dave Grohl, you know, from the Foo Fighters.
Yeah, he originally was
with Nirvana. Okay, so he said that he and his wife were friends with Paul and Paul's wife. So he said that Paul, and when they come to L.A., his wife texts Paul McCartney's wife and says, hey, do you want to go out to dinner? So they go out to dinner. They come back to his house and, you know, they, you know, do cocktails and coffee and stuff. So anyway, Paul McCartney went over to Dave's piano and sat with Dave's 5-year-old daughter and said, hey, let's write a song. And Dave's daughter had never shown any musical interest prior to this, but she was sitting there with Paul and they were writing like a little song, like a little, you know, one of the little silly kid songs, you know. She was coming out with the words at 5 years old and he was like doing the chord. So they wrote like a little, like, I think it maybe a one little paragraph song, doo-wop, diddy, something like that. So Dave was thinking, oh my God, she's going to definitely go into music now. And so after he said, well, what do you think? And Dave has never taken a picture with him and Paul McCartney because, you know, it's considered tacky to be, because I have celebrity friends and I don't take pictures with them because you just don't do that. But he said that's the first time he's ever taken a picture of Paul with his daughter because it's his daughter. And Paul, he actually did a video with them doing, you know, the piano. And then afterwards, he said to his daughter, okay, so do you want me to sign you up for piano lessons? You know, do you want to? She's like, no, I'm over it. And so she never, never played the piano again. She just did it with Paul. That was the first and only time she did it was Paul.
They were great. I remember when I was working on Carly Simon's record that there's a credit on the record that says backing vocals, Paul and Linda. And, you know, they were just kind of like wandering down the hallway going into Studio B, you know, where we were with Carly. And because I was going back and forth at the time. And, they, you know, I said, hey, you want to say, hey, I hear a part. You know, so Paul McCartney's like, hey, I hear a part. Do you mind if I sing it? And, you know, what are you going to say? No. You know, I said, no, of course, go ahead, sing the part, you know. So they actually sang on the record. And, you know, there's credit on it that says Paul and Linda. And then I remember my good friend Bob Olson from high school, he was flying over to hang out in London and he came by the studio and we're walking down the main corridor of AIR and out of the studio come Paul and Linda McCartney. So I said, hey, Paul, how you doing, buddy? And it's like, hey, Paul, this is my high school buddy, Bob. And Bob, this is my friend Paul and his wife Linda. And, you know, they're sitting there, they're having a little kibitz and talking. You know, and then, Bob, you know, drags me aside and goes, oh my God, was that Paul McCartney? It was Paul McCartney. Oh my God, you know? But, you know, my point is that they had, you know, he would stop and talk to anybody. You know, he was just kind of a guy, you know?
I hear that consistently from people. They said it is like if you met him at the laundromat, he would just start talking to you. He's just the coolest guy. Oh my God. You are so lucky to have worked with him. And that being your first job.
I was very, very lucky.
My God, your first job? I mean, I would put that, I'd type that out and put that on the wall. My first job working with Sir George Barry and Paul McCartney. Now, speaking of Carly Simon, one of my faves in the whole world, your very first major engineering assignment and credit was Carly Simon's Secrets album, which we said. And so I was like, first of all, for those who don't understand what a music engineer does on a song or album, because believe it or not, there are people in the music business who don't know what they do. Can you please just sum it up, you know, what you did on this particular album? You know, what does a music engineer do? Or what did
you do? So on this one, I started out just basically setting the mics up and, you know, setting the music stand up and, you know, getting the lyrics, you know, copied if they needed to be copied and stuff like that. And then actually make sure the mic is working and, you know, plug it into the actual wall and then get it into the tape machine in the actual control room and get it up and then, you know, do a run through, get a level together. Get a sound together. Does it need compression? Does it need some EQ to, you know, fit it into the track a little bit better? And that's really what an engineer does, and just kind of crafts the whole sound of the recording.
Oh, God, that I got smoke coming out of my ears already, Mark. My God, that sounds so labor intensive, and it sounds like you better not F this shit up.
Well, you know what? You're right. I had a great mentor, Robin Jeffrey Cable. He was the engineer, and Richard Perry was the producer of the session. And Richard's an amazing, amazing producer. And he had done the Nilsson Schmilsson album, and he did the Tiny Tim records. And you know, he was just a gifted. He had like an ear, like no one heard like Richard Perry heard. You know.
Yeah. So he did work on Tiptoe Through Tulips?
Yeah, he did. He did the early Tiny Tim stuff, and then he went and signed Harry Nilsson, and he did the Nilsson Schmilsson album, which had Without You, which is a classic recording. In fact, it was Harry Nilsson and Mick Jagger that came into the studio one night because Richard was producing Carly, and Richard produced Harry Nilsson's record, and Harry Nilsson was in town and in the studio that night. I know a lot of people don't know this, but Mick Jagger actually sings background vocals on the recording. And you can, yeah, now that I've told you this, when the second, You're So Vain.
Oh, you're what?
Yeah. So now that I've told this to you, when you listen to it from now on, from the second chorus onward, you can hear Mick Jagger's voice come in. And that kind of like created this whole, actually Harry was supposed to sing on the record, but both Harry and Mick that night were just obliterated drunk, obliterated. So we were trying to wake Harry to sing on the record and we couldn't get him up. But so I said, hey, Mick, do you want to sing? And I said, yeah, I'll sing. And, you know, so he's the one that sings backing vocals on You're So Vain. And it kind of created this mystique about the record, you know, because people heard his voice, said, oh, you know, but there was no credit for Mick Jagger on the record. Back in the day, they didn't give full credit because it's just dealing with record company issues and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So Mick Jagger comes in and, you know, sings a part. People hear it and they say, is that Mick Jagger? Is that, I don't know, that sounds like Mick Jagger's in there. I don't know. No, there's no credit on the record. I don't know. Is it Mick Jagger? So that's what kind of created this whole mystique about, hey, you know what? Who's this song be about? And that's, you know, people say, oh, we want a baby.
Yeah, because now we still don't know who, I think.
Well, you know what? You know what, Priscilla? I'm going to tell you. After this interview, I'm going to tell you privately who it's about.
Oh, you mean not on the air privately?
I can't do it on the air.
Okay. I won't tell anyone, I promise.
You can't tell anyone, not even your husband, okay?
I give you my word. When I make a promise, I never, ever. As God's my witness. Okay. Well, thank you. So what do you remember most about working on this project? I mean, obviously, I have to ask, did you meet Carly Simon? And is she as lovely as I think she is?
Yes, she's a great human being. And, you know, besides an absolutely beautiful, stunning woman. And, yeah, we did all the vocals for studios. So the majority of the vocals on the record were recorded there. And, you know, the musicianship was just, like, off the chart, you know, with that record. you know, we had Klaus Voormann on bass when he played on a lot of the Beatles sessions, and Andy Newmark on drums. A lot of the tracks were done in Los Angeles, and they brought the tapes over to England to work on the vocals. And, you know, Paul Buckmaster, who's since passed away, but he was Elton John's string guy and arranger. He also did all the strings on You're So Vain. So that was like a live string session, you know. It's just like it was five-star cream of the crop in terms of musicianship. And it shows, right? I mean, it's like a brilliant, song, right?
Yeah. Yes. So I'm going to listen to this in a whole new light, thanks to you. And I'm playing it as soon as we get off the phone. Well, after I find out who the person is. I had heard that somebody had, not her necessarily, but somebody had paid $25,000 to find that out, and it was given to a private collector. But I don't want to know that. I want to know that I'm the only person that knows. So I believe
Carly sells that information to her favorite charity. If you wanted to know, you would give her, you know, I don't know, 100 grand, 200 grand, whatever, and that would be donated to Carly's favorite charity, and then Carly would reveal to you who the song's really about.
Right. Well, I will take it to my grave. Now, question for you, my darling. I told you, you heard earlier that I was blown away, as everyone I'm sure is, that you have earned 36 Gold and Platinum Record Awards, and you work with some of my favorite people, David Bowie. Oh, Let's Dance. Put on your red shoes and dance the blues. I want to know if you worked on that song, one. Now, there's some questions coming. Duran Duran, Hungry Like a Wolf. Oh, my God. I play that at least 3 times a week. Boy George, oh, my gosh. I wanted him to be my husband, and my boyfriend at the time said, Priscilla, no, that's not going to work out for you. And Billy Idol, I just heard the best story about Billy Idol from Niles Rogers. You know Niles Rogers, like the music producer? He ended up working with Billy Idol. Billy Idol, like, threw up. He was hanging out with David Bowie.
Oh, I got a great Billy Idol story for you.
Oh, tell me. Oh, I've heard like 10. Go ahead, tell me one. Was it throwing David Bowie's shoot?
No. So, okay. I was hired to do. I did the mix for Flesh for Fantasy. We were doing like a dance version of it. And so I worked on that. So I go up and Jeff Aldrich, who's the A&R guy at Chrysalis Records, that signed him. So we're up there, we're playing it. So it's all cranked up. And Billy was actually in the offices that day. He was actually in the back of Chrysalis Records up on 57th Street in Madison and doing some radio interviews. So all of a sudden the guy comes rushing into Jeff's office as we're playing the mix, and she goes, it was a girl. She comes in, you got to get Billy off the radio interview. You got to get him off the radio interview. I said, why? Because he just told the girl at the radio station, he wanted to fuck her, right? this off live radio, right? So before we could actually get out of the office to like get him off the air, he's actually stumbling down the main corridor at Chrysalis Records, and I mean literally, he had a bottle in his hand, and he's literally just bouncing off the walls, back and forth from wall to wall. And I went, oh my God, Billy, what have you done now? You know? So that's the Billy Idol story.
Billy Idol has a million of them. Like you'd need 25 times with these Billy Idol stories. But you know, that's what was happening back then. That's what all the musicians were doing. I mean, if you didn't do that, you were looked at as weird. Now times have changed. But you know, that's what everybody did back in the day. Now, Joan Jett and the Blackhearts. Oh my gosh. So did you work on I Love Rock and Roll?
No, I worked on Cherry Bomb.
Oh, Cherry. Yeah.
So I mixed Cherry Bomb, and then I produced the Good Music album.
I forgot. what song did you work on with Duran Duran?
Meet El Presidente off of the Notorious album, and that was produced by my good friend, Nile Rodgers.
Oh, and David Bowie?
David Bowie, Never Let Me Down. Never Let Me Down. I did the name next song, Never Let Me Down.
Boy George,
I did the soundtrack for a movie called Living My Life, and George had the soundtrack on that as well.
And Cool in the Gang.
Cool in the Gang. She's fresh, fresh.
So exciting to me. Oh, Lord, I can't sing. Oh, my God. But you know what? I try because I love music more than anything. I was not gifted.
Right.
But you know what? Don't care. I will sing and torment your ass till the end of time if you're in here. I don't care. But you know, I love music and I feel so, so honored to have you, someone that has actually worked with all of my favorite stars. And unfortunately, this show is only 50 minutes and it's 46, 47, 48, 49.
We got three minutes.
Okay. So my question to you is, can I bribe you in any way that doesn't involve money or loss to come back on the show?
Absolutely.
Because we have such a good time. I tell you, you and I could talk. We need 3-4 hours.
Oh my God, Priscilla, it went by so fast.
I know. That's what, you know, it is so true, right? Time flies when you're having fun. That is
I love going down memory lane. They were records that I worked on. And you know what? I'm only as good as the recordings that were given to me.
That's
and
right.
When you're given a brilliant song by Kool and the Gang called She's Fresh, how can you screw that up? Or
yes!
A Bowie, Never Let Me Down, or you know, Duran Duran, Meet El Presidente. Like, how do you screw those records up?
You can't. How do you do? You can't. Know? And that's why you end up winning so many awards. Now, I have to ask you, what exciting things? We got to promote you. What can we do in 2 minutes?
Yes. So AMG has gone into the film business. So we're now we're producing films. You know, we got into the movie business in around 2015, 2016, where we picked up a documentary on Drake. It was a live concert film called Homecoming. We picked that up and we did a deal with AMC Theater Chain and with their specialty division called Spectacast at the time. And we did 1,400 theaters worldwide over 2 nights. And it was very successful for us. So that kind of got me into the movie business. And I thought, you know, we should do more of this. So we've been doing that. We signed a deal with Factory Film Studios here in Canada. And we have a distribution and a co-finance arrangement with Factory Film. So we're bringing projects into Factory where they can assist us in financing and, you know, along with all the other great avenues of financing, which, you know, we have in Canada, which is we have an exchange rate today of $1.28. So if you come to Canada with a $10 million budget, you get an extra $2.8 million just because you move the money into Canada. So that's great. We have a 35 to 40% tax break tax credit system, which is extremely advantageous. Canada is in a precarious position being on the border of the United States. If they didn't have these systems in place, they would be literally obliterated with American culture. So that's why they have all these, you know, what we call Canadian content rules. And that's why the music business is so successful in Canada, because the Canadian government supports it. You know, Celine Dion's first album, Sung in French, was a government grant from the Quebec government for $6,000 Canadian, which at the time was a little under $5,000. So it just goes to show you what a good investment it is when they invest in local talent like Drake, like Justin Bieber, like Celine Dion, like a Shania Twain. These are all records that are heavily invested in by the government of Canada with their various programs. So we're very involved in the film and television business. So we have, we just completed our one of our first features called The Sacrifice Game. We just did it for the Shudder channel, and that was shot over in Montreal. And what else we got going on? We got a documentary on Steven Tyler, which we're extremely excited about. I think everyone's gonna love this, who's the lead singer of Aerosmith. And that's going to be a brilliant, brilliant documentary. And that's in collaboration and with the Italian, we have an Italian co-finance partner. And not many people know this, but Steven Tyler is of Italian descent. So it's we were able to get the Italian government to kick in funds for the project as well. And we got a bunch of other things in development, film and TV wise. We have a television show called The Track, which is a kind of like the Housewives of Beverly Hills, but basically in the horse racing industry with the owner, the owner's wife, the jockey's girlfriend, the horses, the trainers, the bettors, you know, and it's kind of a reality show. Basically, it's a 1-hour reality show, and we're just putting that deal together right now.
Ooh, now I'm a reality television fanatic. Now I watch everything.
Yes. Oh, you're gonna love this. You are gonna love this.
Ooh, yes. Let me know when it comes out because I might miss it. You know, we missed it. I missed so much or so much information. You know, I hope I actually requested you on all my social media sites, so maybe you'll add me and then I can see it pop up.
Yep.
But before we go, I have to get you to make me a promise. I am obsessed, Mark, with Harry Styles. Like, I want to skin him alive and make a pillow. Have you ever met him? And if not, is it possible you could clip a piece of his hair if you run into him for me?
You know what? I've never met him, but the number one album that I'm listening to over the past month is the Harry Styles album. It's an absolutely brilliant, brilliant recording.
He's brilliant. Oh,
great songs, great production, great lyrics. It's just a really brilliant recording.
Are you talking about his latest album, Harry's House, or Fine Line?
The new one, the
new one, Harry's House. Yeah, Harry's House.
With late night talking on it and Watermelon Sugar. And
yeah, oh, that's Fine Line. That's Fine Line. Yeah. That's the previous one. Yeah, I love that one. Oh, my God.
Yeah. Well, I think he's incredibly talented.
I am sending you out with a mission. Please keep me in mind if you run into him. Any part that you can grab off of him, and you can use me as an excuse. Priscilla made me do it. There you go. That, like, the devil made you do it. Priscilla made me do it. All right, sweetie. Well, I want to tell everyone, please go to his website. This is my favorite man in the universe, Mr. Mark S. Berry. Please go to his website, theamgsingoodcorp.com. Go on Instagram, follow him, the AMG Corp. Facebook, Mark S. Berry. Twitter, Mark Berry AMG. And he promised that he's going to come back on the show next year. You know, you can come anytime you want to promote any project. Just, you know, I'm gonna send you what is that called? The phone number text. I'm gonna text you, and that way you'll have my phone number. Put my digits in your contact.
Okay, so I gotta call. I'm gonna call you right back, or you're gonna call me right back.
I'm going to call you right back because I have to close everything.
Okay, you call me right back
and
then we'll make it happen. And you'll be a happy camper tonight. All right?
Thank you so much. Thanks, everyone. Say goodbye to your fans. Say goodbye to your fans.
Great. Okay, everybody. Thank you very much for tuning in. I really appreciated it. Priscilla, thank you very much. Sam, thank you for putting it all together. And thank you, everybody.
I'll be back next year.
Okay.
Thank you, everybody. We'll see you next week. Bye.
You're listening to Question Reality with Priscilla Leona, right here on LA Talk Radio.